Joining us now at our studios is Northfield Schools Superintendent, Dr. Matt Hillman. Matt, good morning. Thank you so much for coming in.
I'm glad to be here, Jeff. Great to see you on a beautiful morning. I mean, we see some 50s and even 60s in the forecast, but as Minnesotans, we know all too well, there's one more big snowstorm lurking out there somewhere.
No, there's not. Folks,
good. I like your attitude.
Hopefully that big snowstorm will come on like December 20th.
I'll take that, yes. That would be from your lips to God's ears, Jeff.
Let's talk about, well, you know, the spring is coming now.
You bet.
It's on the way. We've gotten through winter, and it looks like the worst of the COVID outbreaks is, I don't want to say over, but I don't know if it'll ever be over, but it's certainly has changed a little bit. The numbers have changed. We talked to you a bit about that last time you were in. Where are we at now with the COVID restrictions and as far as just the overall condition of the schools and the students?
So we are on a very good trajectory, Jeff. And so we're really pleased. As you know, just in the month of January, we had over 660 new cases reported. Right now, our two-week, we always do a two-week look back. Every day we update our dashboard to report the number of new cases that have been reported in the last 14 days. Yesterday, we hit a low that I don't remember the last time we hit of 9. Coming out of spring break, we did add a couple of cases to the a few cases to the dashboard this morning, 4 to be exact. So, you know, we have 13 new cases reported to us across the entire district. That's, you know, over 4,300 or so students and faculty on campus. So 13 out of that is a much better place than we've been for some time. So in terms of active cases, right now we are in very good shape. We have rolled back and sunset almost all of our restrictions. So the last building that was continuing to mask was the Northfield Community Education Center. That restriction was lifted, or that safety measure was lifted on March 7th. So no one is required to wear a mask in any Northfield Public Schools building at this point. They're recommended but optional. We've also rolled back required quarantine for students who are would have been considered close contact, students and staff who would have been considered close contacts to someone who had tested positive for COVID-19. Of course, if you do test positive for COVID-19, you still need to stay home. And if you're sick, you still need to stay home. I think even though we are really seeing a turning point, hopefully, right? We've felt this a couple times before, and this virus is shifty, and it can make a comeback pretty quickly. And I think the key thing is we still need to maintain our guard. We still need to make sure we do those good things that we should be doing all along anyway. Washing our hands, covering our cough. If we are not feeling well, stay home. And if, of course, if you test positive for COVID-19, students or staff are required to stay home for at least 5 days, then they can come back with a negative test after that using one of the rapid antigen tests. So, Jeff, this is the best COVID-19 report that I've given in some time. So we're really pleased to be moving forward together. And again, I just want to thank everyone in the community. This has been very difficult. And it will still have some difficulty, but I really appreciate the support that the community's provided us.
Boy, let's all hope this is the last time that we have to go through that again. Let's move on. You had a school board meeting last night. Let's take a look at some of the highlights. Let's talk first off with facilities.
Yeah, so facility rental and service fees. So every year, Director of Community Education Erin Bailey comes to the board. She submits a recap of how the buildings were used in the previous years, and then she also looks at the rental and service fees. So this is when people from outside the district want to rent school district facilities. These are public buildings. Our rental fees are intended to cover our costs, things like that. And so, of course, over the last year, there's been not as much rental because we still had the chunk of time where we were in the midst of COVID at the height of it. But we are seeing quite a bit of those rentals coming back, which is great. We are not recommending any changes in those fees for service or rental for the next year. So if people are interested in, you know, renting any of the district facilities, they can contact Bonnie Johnson at the Northfield Community Education Center. And again, no rental fee or service fee increases for the next year.
All right. Let's move on to talk about budgets. You
yes.
have a number of different budgets. And, you know, here being March, we're in mid-March, your new year will begin at some point, the school year anyway. What is it, July 1st?
Yeah, July 1st is our fiscal year. We do a July 1st to June 30th fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Now, which of the budgets are you working on right now at this point?
So we're working on all of the budgets, but we present budgets in a certain order. So right now, what we presented last night, Director of Finance Val Murdestorf presented two funds together. So in Minnesota, there are school districts have several different budget funds that they're required to report on. Two of those that we presented last night were the debt service fund and the internal service fund. The debt service fund essentially is a flow-through account for when we have passed a bond referendum or we've gone out for a smaller bond. So, for example, we've talked, we're going to do a bond for the middle school roof. The debt service fund basically collects the property tax for those projects or for what we have to pay for. We're required to levy 105% of what we are anticipated to owe in that coming year. We then use that debt service fund to pay those bills, to pay the principal and interest each year. And then every year, because you're required to charge 100 or levy 105% of what you're anticipating to pay that year, every year the state does a calculation. It's called an excess calculation. And there's a, as you might imagine, it's a fairly complex mathematical formula that then if we have more than what the state deems appropriate in that debt service fund balance, that is returned to the taxpayers. So you'll see that that's part of the adjustments that happen every year in September and then finalized in December as part of the levy. So the debt service levy is when we have bonding or outstanding debt, we levy the amount that we are required to do. We then go ahead and pay that, and it's really kind of an in and out fund. The internal service fund is the fund that we use to pay our dental and health insurance. So we actually pay all of our own health insurance and dental insurance bills. So our employees pay their premiums to the school district. We use a third-party administrator, what most people would look at as their insurance companies. We use Medica for our health insurance, and we use Delta for our dental. And so anyone who goes to a doctor or a dentist, they give them their card, and those bills come to us, and then we pay those bills with our premiums. And so this fund performed really, really well for a long time. In fact, we haven't actually had to increase the dental premium since 2006. So that fund has really done well, and that's very common. Dental is a simpler program to operate. There's just less moving parts. The health insurance program, as we've talked before, was honored by the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota as a local government innovation, and we had a run of 7 or 8 years where we didn't have to increase premiums there as well. But as anyone who's listening knows, health insurance and health care can be complicated, and we've seen over the last 3 years a significant increase in the number of our claims. And we just specifically have a number of high claimants, and we're happy that that insurance is there to support our employees. It's one of the benefits that we have. We did have a sizable premium increase this past January, of which the district was able to help mitigate that impact to employees on the short-term basis. But as we move forward, we are going to have to increase premiums again as we move ahead. And so this is a fund that we're just really working hard to make sure that we can keep it going at the rate that it's been before. We've had some changes. We've had some more claims. And so this is one that we are just managing a little bit differently than we did over the last several years. Fund balance is very hard to build, Jeff, and it can go very quickly.
Yeah. And that, 8 years without an increase is a remarkable run. What will the increase be? Are we looking at...
Yeah, so the...
Yeah, private has been, mine's gone up 200%, 300%, 400% in a few years ago.
Yeah, so this, we did have a 25% premium increase overall. And so that typically is shared between based on contract language, between the district. So the district provides some of that, and then the employee pays some of that. Because of that really substantial and change in the fall, as we've shared before, the district was able to step in and help mitigate. We used some of our general fund balance, and we used some of our federal COVID relief dollars to be able to mitigate that increase. So we were able to limit and make the increase to the employee fairly minimal. But that was for 1 year, and so we're working on how we're going to be moving that forward. So we had no increase for a long time, and unfortunately it was a 25% increase that went into effect this January. The district picked up most of that. Our employees have been working very hard during the pandemic and different and more difficult circumstances than they've ever seen. We didn't feel that was fair to them to bear the burden of that, so the district did step in using some of our strategic resources to buy down that premium increase for 1 year, and then we're working on how do we mitigate this, and again, make it sustainable again long term like we had for so many years this coming January.
Superintendent Matt Hillman is with us. We're talking about things that happened last night, some of the items discussed last night at the Northfield School Board meeting. What else went on last night? Do you have...
So I gave a budget prioritization committee update. I'm going to just not spend too much time on this today, Jeff. I encourage listeners to go back to the interview that you did with Val Murdestorf and I that outlined the process. Rich Larson did a really great story the last time that I came in talking about budget prioritization. Bottom line is we brought 60 people of the community together for four meetings. We're through two meetings. We're asking them to help us look at adjusting our expenditures or reducing our expenditures by $4.5 million over a couple of years. Again, the main reasons are continued lack of state funding, declining enrollment. One of the big things, as we've talked about, is the special education cross-subsidy, which is a significant it's a significant challenge for every school district in the state. But we're asking this group to do it differently. We're asking them to prioritize. Rather than cutting the budget, which we could do in about 90 minutes with a red pen and a spreadsheet, we've got about 60 people, staff, administrators, community members, students who are coming together. They've been through two meetings so far, and they're working to tell us what are the services and programs that they want to make sure stay that will help us, give us the best chance to achieve our vision, our commitments, and the benchmarks that we recently adopted in our strategic plan. Meeting number three is tonight. We've got another meeting next week, and then the administration team will then operationalize those priorities into a budget plan. And then it'll continue moving down the road to the board in April and May. So that's part of the general fund. So for listeners, I encourage you to go back to listen to that interview with Val and I a couple of weeks ago. And again, Rich did some news stories on this in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's all archived on our website. So check it out. She did a great job, and both of you did a great job of laying it out in language that I could pretty much understand. Yeah. I think the average person could understand.
And at the end of the day, we don't sugarcoat it, right? It's a $4.5 million expenditure reduction over a couple of years. We have some great tools because we've really managed our finances well. We have some tools to be able to help implement those changes, adjust our budget to the budget reality of fewer students. But at the same time, we want to look at it differently. And it's a different mindset. It's quite messy, actually, to say, what do you want, as opposed to what can we cut? And we're willing to live in that messy right now because we think that this mindset of what are the programs and services that give us the best chance to achieve the vision, the commitments, and the benchmarks that the board has adopted is a better way to budget. We want to make sure we use the resources that we have to give us the best chance to help kids succeed. So that's where we're at with it, and we'll give you more information over the next couple of weeks.
All right. Anything else from last night's meeting?
Two final items.
Okay.
One is that in the continued work that we've done on trying to keep Northfield High School's facility current, part of our plan from the last 2 years was to remodel the high school office. So last summer, as one of the final parts of the 2018 bond referendum, we updated the old district office at the high school because we moved to the new district offices, the former Longfellow building. And we updated our previous district offices to house, one part of it houses our technology services staff, and the other parts of it serve students who are working in our Torch program or what we call our multi-tiered systems of support, so kids who need additional assistance or tutoring. So we've got this great space, kids who are needing to make up credits. We've got this great space in the old district office to be able to serve those students. And we had some debate at the time of that decision. Should we move the high school office into the old district offices? And we looked at it. We felt that the old district offices serve these smaller student groups much better. So we are planning to remodel the high school office this summer. And we had winning bids. We had 22 bids covering 10 different contracts. So we don't just do one bid. We bid 10 different components. So it's things like the general construction, the electricity, the plumbing. Each of those is an individual package. And we've learned over the last several years, when you break it out like that and take those multiple bids, you get really good competitive bidding, and you're able to get a better cost for the taxpayer. So the total cost for that remodel is going to be just over $1 million. That's been dramatically impacted by inflation over the last several months. But we are going to be able to do it. We're using our long-term facilities maintenance revenue and a little bit of operating capital to be able to do that. And so it's going to be do things like fix, you know, how that secure entrance and make that. We did a secure entrance a couple of years ago just as a stopgap measure. It's going to make that a more fluid piece while still keeping that secure entrance. It's going to update that office area. One of the big components of it is going to modernize the nurse's office. That's a big part of our main office. And the high school office, high school nurse's office serving 1,290 kids is one of the smallest in the district. So that's a big part of it. So that work will begin this summer. This is part of our ongoing effort to maintain that facility. And as you know, we've got some upcoming task force meetings about the high school facility. But what we're going to continue to take care of this building, because we don't know why the public would trust us with doing any more renovations or things like that if we don't take care of what we currently have. So we did adopt those bids last night, a little bit more than $1 million. There were 10 contracts. We had 22 bids. And we were very pleased. We did get two companies who are local within a 30-mile radius.
Mm-hmm. All right. Finally, you said two things.
Yeah, one last thing. I just want to share that we're so pleased that Cheryl Hall, our Director of Special Services, and also our COVID-19 coordinator for the last couple of years, was named the Minnesota Association, or the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education Administrator of the Year. And Cheryl is just an altruistic public servant. I know Rich did a story on the award last week, but for folks in the community who know Cheryl, she's just a treasure. Please congratulate her. This is the highest honor she can receive in her field. And so we're very pleased that her statewide organization recognized her as the Special Education Director of the Year.
Yeah, congratulations to Cheryl. Well earned. And it's good to see good things happening to people who do good things.
Absolutely.
All right. Superintendent Matt Hillman has been our guest. Matt, thank you so much for coming in. We'll see you next week or in a couple of weeks.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
All right. Coming up in just a few, we have Tim McNiff, news with a side of sports. Here's MNN.
Minnesota News Network. Good morning, I'm Brent Palm. Governor Tim Walz says negotiations have been productive, but no agreement has been reached as he and legislative leaders wrangle over the details of replenishing the state's unemployment insurance trust fund and money for COVID bonuses for frontline workers.
We need to know that you just at some point in time need to make a decision. May not be 100% accepted. It may not be the 100% exactly what you wanted, but it's a decision that works for people in Minnesota to move forward.
Walz says replenishing the unemployment insurance trust fund and frontline COVID bonuses are both good for Minnesota. Well, next Monday is the deadline to remove fish houses from the ice on northern Minnesota lakes. Tasha Radel has more.
With warmer temperatures in the forecast, conservation officers are urging people to begin the process of removing permanent shelters early. Anglers are responsible for removing their shelters by the deadline and ensuring no trash is left behind. Commonly left items include bait, blocking material, bottles, and cans. As use of wheelhouses has increased, there also have been additional instances of people dumping their sewage atop the ice. If shelters aren't removed by the deadline, owners can be prosecuted and structures may be confiscated and removed by a conservation officer.
University of Minnesota loosening its face covering requirements on all its campuses. Masks will no longer be required at sporting events, common areas, dining areas, and workspace. They still need to be worn in classrooms, labs, public transportation, and healthcare facilities. And Karl Anthony Towns scored a franchise record 60 points in the Timberwolves 149-139 win last night in San Antonio.
I appreciate these guys so much because I ain't never been celebrated. You know, I don't know how that feels. You know, so to have kind of people do that when I got 60 was a crazy feeling. I remember getting 56. It was kind of just like, it was treated like it was another day. I appreciate that. They make these moments special.
The Timberwolves are 10 games over 500 with a 40-30 record.
From the KYMN News Center, Rich Larson is joining us with Look at Local News Headlines. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Jeffrey. KYMN Radio has learned that Saturday is St. Patrick's Day. Rice County Law Enforcement will be increasing its presence on what is traditionally one of the busiest drinking nights of the year. Rice County Sheriff Jesse Thomas said that while there is nothing wrong with celebrating the day, it is important to keep everyone's safety in mind, and that especially means exercising good judgment on the roads. According to the Sheriff's Department, alcohol and drug impairment is one of the most dangerous driving behaviors seen on Minnesota roads. Since 2016, there have been 397 drunk driving-related traffic deaths in Minnesota. Alcohol-related crashes not only take lives, but they can also change them forever. An average of 384 life-changing injuries were caused by alcohol-related crashes in that same period. We understand people are looking for a reason to celebrate, and we want our community members to enjoy St. Patrick's Day, said Sheriff Thomas. But we also want to impress upon everyone the importance of safe driving. If you've been drinking, make the right choice to find a sober driver to get you and your friends home safely. The statement strongly encourages people to plan for a sober ride by designating a sober driver using public transportation, a cab, or an app-based ride service, or by staying at the location of the party. Also, if you encounter a drunk driver or if you know someone who is impaired that isn't driving, call 911. Please be prepared to provide location, license plate number, and observed dangerous behavior when calling. And that's one of the stories we're following this morning. As long as we're talking about it. Go ahead.
Saturday is not really St. Patrick's Day.
No.
It's Thursday, right?
St. Patrick's Day is Thursday.
It's Thursday, okay.
Yes. As long as we're talking about St. Patrick's Day, I want to put in a little plug because Corey Butler and I will present to you tomorrow night on St. Patrick's Day Eve, St. Patrick's on the Cannon.
A 3-hour program of Irish music?
It is 2.5 hours. Yes, it is. Because we can't stop talking about our just favorite Irish things. St. Patrick's on the Cannon.
Do either one of you have Irish?
I actually go into this in depth, obviously, because it's 2.5 hours long. No, I was adopted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, I had 100% convinced myself that I had to be at least half Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a drop of Irish blood in my body. In fact, I did the Ancestry.com thing, right?
Uh-huh.
And it came back like 4% Irish when I first got it. But that will evolve from time to time. Mm-hmm. They've taken all my Irish away from me.
There is something about Ancestry.com. I don't know what they have against the Irish. They've taken all my Irish.
Have they?
Away, too. Like, whoa. Wait a second.
Bring that back. I want some Irish.
I come from... we can very easily trace my mother's... father's side of the family,
okay.
O'Hare's, way back into Ireland, and
one would think, right?
Well, yeah,
I can. I've never been, never met my birth father, but he has one of the most German names in all of, you know, the lexicon, right? And I don't have any German at all in me.
Hmm.
So it's weird.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that Wednesday night. Rich, we'll see you back at 8-ish.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Rich Larson from the KYMN News Center. News with a side of sports. Tim McNiff coming up next. Here's Jim with a traffic update.
494 beats 394 in the West Metro. There is a ramp closure now.
Good morning.
Hey, Tim, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing.
All right. You're up early in Vegas again today?
I am up early for you, my friend.
All right. Thank you. What do we got going on today?
Weather-wise back there?
What's that?
What's happening weather-wise back there?
We're looking at 54 and sunny today, 61 tomorrow.
Boy. Yay.
Yeah. Right. Into the 60s over the weekend, too. It's looking pretty good.
Cool. Okay, so we're going to start with Ukraine.
Okay.
Then we're coming back to Minneapolis. Jacob Frey proposing a policy change on the police department's use of no-knock warrants.
Okay.
Finally, something that both Republicans and Democrats can agree on. That's in the Minnesota legislature.
Okay.
And the head of New Prague School District says at least one investigation into alleged racial allegations, he couldn't find any proof of it.
Hmm, okay.
And that's my four.
That's it? Sounds good. All right, we're into the open now. I think Ned has a new open, so we'll listen. Here you go, hold on.
Okay.
And Irem Suits Furniture in Faribault, and by the Ranchero Supper Club in Webster, who reminds you that the Smelt are ready to run. Now here they are, this year's contenders for the Smelt National Championship, Jeff Johnson and Tim McNiff.
Come on.
Yes. Smelt is just a funny word for a fish. Tim, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. Are you a smelt eater? Do you eat fish?
There's a lot of people who like fish more than I do.
Okay. So, fair enough.
So smelting was a huge deal up at UMD.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was looking to go there, I'm going, well, it sounds like a great party and everything. And then that year, which would have been, I guess, the spring of 81, a couple kids died. Something happened where they went into the water, and so that became the end of the big smelt run, kind of as an unsanctioned, people, I guess, used to just know, they would hear when they were running up in Duluth, and they would just go and do this,
mm-hmm.
and then it became a big party, and then they shut the party down. So when I got up there, it was not a thing. I have eaten smelt, but I know you go to, is it the Ranchero?
Yeah.
Where you go and you partake? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I get my smelt every year. It's delicious. It's all you can eat. Who could ask for more?
No. I like walleye done well. Like, I have friends that I go on fishing trips with that they'll allow me to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a fisherman, but man, if you get, that kind of fish done right, yeah, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, let's move into some news. Let's start off with Ukraine. What's the latest?
Russia's relentless bombardment of Ukraine edged closer to central Kyiv as a series of strikes hit a residential neighborhood, while the leaders of three European Union countries planned a bold visit to Ukraine's capital, and the number of people the war has driven from the country has now passed 3 million. Shortly before dawn, large explosions thundered across Kyiv from what Ukrainian authorities said were artillery strikes. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said barrages hit four multi-story buildings in the city and caused dozens of deaths. Forgive me, I had to sneeze. Of course, it doesn't.
Right.
I never have to sneeze until I get in the air with you, Jeff. That's the way it works. The strikes targeted a western district of Kyiv, disrupting a relatively calm that had returned after an initial advance by Russian forces was stopped in the early days of the war. As Russia stepped up its assault, the leaders of Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovenia announced that they would travel to Ukraine's embattled capital Tuesday to show support for the country. Leaders of the 27-nation EU were informed of the trip but did not sanction it. An EU official who spoke on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the trip said European Council President Charles Michel had pointed out the security risks of such an undertaking. The International Organization for Migration said the number of people who have fled Ukraine since Russia invaded on February 24th passed 3 million on Tuesday. The UN has described the flood of people passing into Poland and other neighboring countries as Europe's biggest refugee crisis since World War II. Russian and Ukrainian negotiators also plan to hold a second day of talks as Russia's invasion of Ukraine entered day 20. The Red Cross, the United Nations Refugee Agency, says millions of people face food and medicine shortages, along with the immediate conflict threats of shelling and air attacks. The Ukrainian government, Jeff, they're trying new aid and evacuation efforts, but every time they try them, or if the Red Cross does, the Russians just shell it, and that's the end of that.
Wow. At the humanitarian efforts? Wow. Boy, that...
But then they don't. They do that, but then they say they didn't do it, mm-hmm. and they never reported it at home, of course, so that's the game we're playing.
Yeah, wow. All right. Okay, what else? Anything else with Ukraine before we move on?
China was asked about the situation, and they just said, mm-hmm. We're impartial on it. We're not supporting the Russians. We're not supporting Ukraine. We're impartial. Again, I guess that's progress to some extent, but I don't know if that can be taken at face value either. But that's probably the only really other major notable new development
mm-hmm.
in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, China's, that whole neutral game, pretty soon they're going to have to take a side, I would think, if this escalates anywhere past the Ukraine. Hopefully they're not on Russia's side. I couldn't see much to gain by that.
Well, that's we've talked about this before, and I've seen many credible reports on this, is the Chinese are watching this as close as any nation is. Because sort of on Xi Jinping's to-do list was to invade Taiwan.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's watching what's happening here and the world's reaction to it. And I don't know if it will dissuade him or stop him, but it's got to have him thinking twice about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's turn it back to Minnesota. Jacob Fry, the Minneapolis mayor, is looking at some changes in the police, the way they conduct their business.
Well, changes that he said he had actually enacted in the past, and he had not. Mm-hmm. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Fry Monday proposing a policy change that would permanently ban the police department's use of no-knock warrants. Instead, officers must knock, announce, and wait. Though not yet written, the policy would prohibit Minneapolis police from both applying for and executing no-knock warrants. The announcement, of course, comes nearly 6 weeks after a Minneapolis police officer fatally shot a mere Lock 22 during a search at a downtown apartment. Lock was not named on the warrant. It was Lock's death that pushed the city's no-knock warrant policy back under scrutiny, police accountability activists noted. And Fry had campaigned before his November re-election saying he had banned no-knock warrants. But on February 2nd, Minneapolis police officers performed a no-knock warrant search shortly before 7 a.m. at the Bolero Flats apartment homes. No representative from the police department was present for Fry's announcement, but the mayor says Interim Chief Amelia Huffman supports the proposal. The police department would begin writing an official policy, which should be completed in about 3 weeks, Fry said. Then the department will begin training officers in the changes. In the meantime, the city's moratorium on no-knock warrants remains. The Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis could not be reached for a comment.
Hmm. Now, banning the no-knock warrants, that's fairly common in large cities. Isn't it? St. Paul has banned that, haven't they?
I can't speak to that, Jeff. I don't know. I don't know whether they have or they have not. It's just one of those things we've talked about before. I think any time you put that, we're banning it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be, if we're both doing this show in any length of time, we are going to be talking about a story where a police officer is killed because they announced, hey, we're the police and we're here, and somebody's going to do something. And they're going to say, we should add a no-knock warrant. And I just think when you ban something entirely, make it difficult, make the policy to get that really exceptional, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I worry about doing something when you ban it entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see where it goes. He has now. Can he just do that, or does the council have to approve it? I would imagine if he did have the council approve it, they probably wouldn't have too much problem.
Well, the article that I just read to you, which came from the Star Tribune, says nothing about the council.
Yeah.
It talks about the police would then write the policy, and then they would begin training officers in it. So it sounds like something he can just do.
All right.
And I don't think it's anything the council would fight him on. I think they're all to the point now where they want this.
Yeah, it sounds like they do. All right, let's move on to the Minnesota legislature. The session continues on. What's going on now?
Well, we found something that Democrats and Republicans can agree on, and they voted unanimously Monday to require the Legislative Auditor's Office to review the troubled Southwest Light Rail project. That legislation, which the House passed 129-1 earlier this month, has the support of Governor Tim Walz. The bill, which appropriates $200,000 from the General's Fund for the audit, also requires the Metropolitan Council to provide status updates on the Southwest project twice a year to legislators. The vote was 65-0 in the Senate. I guess I want to know who the one person was in the House who decided to vote against reviewing this. You have a husband or wife who's actually working for the Southwest Transit? I don't know. Senate amendment to the bill would require the council to notify the legislature if the project is expected to be delayed by 6 months or more, or if the total cost increased by 5%. House lawmakers can either agree with those changes proposed in the amendment or move the bill to the conference committee to work out the differences. Earlier this year, the Met Council, which is building the 14.5-mile line between Minneapolis and Eden Prairie, said construction would cost an additional $450 million to $550 million, bring the total cost to $2.75 billion. Passenger service would begin in 2027. Jeff, that would be 4 years later than first expected.
Yeah, and what was the price tag on that originally? I was thinking it was less than half of $2.7 billion.
I don't have that here.
I don't have that either, but I was thinking it was like $1 billion, $1.2 billion, something along that line. Twice as long, twice as much money.
And still not solved.
No.
So what they're talking about, the things that have caused the issues, this thing is still going to be operating within feet of certain structures, going through areas which are flooding at certain times of the year. I mean, the engineers have still not solved the issues here. And we're still years away and millions and millions of dollars from